WTY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we do thank you for joining us on Crosstalk. Friends, there is much that's going on in our world right now, certainly much across our nation. We have spoken previously on this program on communist goals that were read into the congressional record January 10th of 1963, and I'd like to share just a few of them. Goal number 17 is to get control of the schools, use them as transmission belts for socialism and current communist propaganda, soften the curricula, get control of teachers' association, put the party line in textbooks. Goal number 30, discredit the American founding fathers, present them as selfish aristocrats who had no concern for the common man. Goal number 31, belittle all forms of American culture and discourage the teaching of American history on the ground that it was only a minor part of the big picture. This kind of revisionism is a very thing that is taking place in our nation today, and there is great effort taken against Thomas Jefferson, the third president of the United States of America, author of the Declaration of Independence. Some teach that he was an atheist, others say he was anti-Semitic, yet others declare he followed the teachings of Islam. Well, our guest today has put together what I believe is perhaps one of the most comprehensive exposés on Thomas Jefferson as it pertains to the truth about him versus the revisionism attempts that are underway. Joining us, we welcome back to Crosstalk Dr. Catherine Millard, president of Christian Heritage Ministries. She has a doctorate of ministry degree in the area of Christian education, recipient of the George Washington Honor Medal, sponsored by the Freedoms Foundation at Valley Forge for Excellence in Patriotic and Individual Achievement, and the Faith and Freedom Religious Heritage of America Award for significant contributions in affirming and strengthening the biblical principles in American life. She's the author of numerous books. She's taught extensively on the subject in college, universities, and schools throughout the nation and abroad. She is author of the book Thomas Jefferson, Accuracy versus Revisionism, an expose. Dr. Millard, thank you for joining us today.
I'm delighted to be back with you, Jim.
Let's begin. Why is Thomas Jefferson so targeted? I mean, we see a lot of the founders attacked and with issues, but why Thomas Jefferson?
Because Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence, and he wrote the Statute for Religious Freedom in Virginia, and many other great documents of American history that provide the nation with its civil and religious liberties.
Mm-hmm.
Those two in particular.
So are these attacks recent, or have they been going on for many, many years?
Well, they've been going on since the 1930s when this Marxist movement was put into effect to remove the original history, one-of-a-kind original documents in American history from public consciousness and to rewrite the textbooks and the history books, which was done. And so we're now three generations along of wonderful people in this wonderful nation that have not studied originals. But they particularly targeted Thomas Jefferson because it was Thomas Jefferson's pen that stood up against the monarchy for the very first time in world history. Both those documents I mentioned, the Declaration of Independence and the Statute for Religious Freedom in Virginia, were first in the world.
Hmm.
There had never been a document like the Declaration of Independence before, which took the crown off a monarch and put it on the people.
Yeah.
We the people. And the Statute for Religious Freedom in Virginia, and it applies to the whole nation, was the very first in the world where Thomas Jefferson had the courage to go against the state-controlled church, which had controlled Virginia. And bear in mind, Virginia was enormous at that time, went right up to the Mississippi River, and it controlled Virginia through the monarchy, because the monarchy controlled the Anglican Church, and they had controlled the people for over 100 years, their worship system. And so when the dissidents came along, the Baptists and the Mennonites and the Quakers and the Presbyterians and the Methodists, they were highly persecuted, and they were forced to pay taxes or tithes to the Anglican Church and attended. And so Thomas Jefferson took their side, and he disestablished this ecclesiastical control for the very first time in world history.
Wow. Dr. Millard, what do we know about the early life of Thomas Jefferson?
Well, that I went back right to the very beginning, because his formation is extremely important in understanding his philosophy of life. He was, at a very early age, put to a Christian school with a minister of the gospel. And then after that, his name was Mr. Douglas, Reverend Douglas. And after that, at age 9, he was put in what he describes in his autobiography as a Latin school. It was a classical school, Christian school, by Reverend Dr. James Morey. And in doing this research, actually last fall, I tracked down the sign there where his school was, and it's very near the church where he was also a pastor. So Reverend Morey is actually buried there. The church is now called Grace Church, but it used to be called Walker's Parish. And he was the very first pastor, and he's buried under the pulpit.
Hmm.
They've got a beautiful monument for him there where he's buried. And he formed Thomas Jefferson's mind in the scriptures. We're very fortunate to have his handwritten sermons. I put one of them in the book, in the beginning of the book, to show you. It's actually a sermon on secret prayer, which is from Matthew 6:6. And he states that there's no greater, his actual words are, that hypocrisy is a very great sin. But it's magnificently written and based on the scriptures. So Thomas Jefferson was formed at a very early age on the scriptures, and he was also vestryman at that church for 5 years, at that very church where his pastor gave all these wonderful biblical sermons, and also was a joint tutor of Thomas Jefferson and prepared him for the College of William and Mary, because James Morey had graduated himself from the College of William and Mary. And most people don't know, I suppose quite a lot don't know, that the College of William and Mary was started as a seminary, and I have the first page, the original handwritten page, by King William and Queen Mary, both Protestant Christian kings in this book, to show you that it was started as a seminary to train young men in the scriptures and also to bring the gospel to the Western Indians, to the glory of God.
You know, that's very interesting, because I'd like to have you address the role that religion had on him and the truth of how Thomas Jefferson viewed Christianity. And I ask that because there are those who insist that he was anti-Christian. Some say he was an atheist. Some say he was very adverse to the Bible. So what role did religion have on him, and how did he view Christianity?
Well, you have to go through, you can't just go to one or two documents taken out of context, and that's what the revisionists do. They're an expert at that. So I have gone to great many in this book of original documents of American history, and you can see shining out his Christianity. Now, when you go to a summary view, I'm going to back up.
Mm-hmm.
When you go to a summary view on the rights of British America, was against, there's an excellent clause there against slavery. He was dead against slavery because the Bible is against slavery. God's against slavery. But when you go to his statute for religious freedom in Virginia, an atheist or an agnostic or a non-believer could never have written these words. And it's excerpted right there in our beautiful Jefferson Memorial in the nation's capital. There are 5 original writings, and this is one of them. It's the second greatest accomplishment of Thomas Jefferson, according to Thomas Jefferson, after his Declaration of Independence. So I'll just read a little bit of it to you, to give you an idea. It begins with, well aware that Almighty God hath created the mind free, that all attempts to influence it, the mind, by temporal punishments and burdens or by civil incapacitations tend only to beget habits of hypocrisy and meanness and are a departure from the plan of the holy author of our religion. Now, holy, separate, pure, is Almighty God, author with a capital A, the pioneer of our religion, that's Jesus Christ. And then it goes on, who being Lord of both of body and mind, yet chose not to propagate it by coercions on either, as was his almighty power to do, that the impious presumptions of legislators and rulers, civil as well as ecclesiastical, who being themselves but fallible and uninspired men, have assumed dominion over the faith of others, setting up their own opinions and modes of thinking as the only true and infallible, and as such endeavoring to impose them on others, hath established and maintained false religions over the greatest part of the world and through all time. And this is the key, that to compel a man to furnish contributions of money for the propagation of opinions which he disbelieves is sinful and tyrannical. You see, Jefferson believed that God was almighty, powerful, creator of heaven and earth, that it is sinful and tyrannical to force people to go to the Anglican Church, a church they disbelieved in, which he labeled with James Madison as corrupt and indolent. So sin is denounced in the Bible, tyranny is denounced in the Bible, and Thomas Jefferson believed that even the forcing him to support this or that teacher of his own religious persuasion is depriving him of the comfortable liberty of giving his contributions to the particular pastor whose morals he would make his pattern and whose powers he feels most persuasive to righteousness. And it's withdrawing from the ministry those temporal rewards which, proceeding from an approbation of their personal conduct, are an additional incitement to earnest and unremitting labors for the instruction of mankind. And it goes on, you see, you can read in his documents, American History, they're based on the scripture.
Mm-hmm.
And very few people, many people know the Statute for Religious Freedom in Virginia.
Yeah.
And I've read it in the Jefferson Memorial. It's accepted, of course, for the wall. But few are aware that he wrote Notes on Religion. And I was able to research those in the rare book collection of the Library of Congress, where I've done most of my research for 30 years, and also the Rare Manuscript Division. And those Notes on Religion, they prove to you that Thomas Jefferson knew fundamental Christianity as opposed to Christian heretics, because he lists all the Christian heretics after expounding on what true Protestant Christianity is, based only on the scriptures.
He was a regular reader of the Bible, wasn't he?
Absolutely. And we have that proven by his overseer, Captain Edmund Bacon. His book was published in 1862, and it's in the Rare Book Collection, so I was very privileged to be able to consult that book and put it in this new book, which was just released. As you know, Thomas Jefferson, Accuracy vs. Revisionism and Exposé. And Edmund Bacon states that he often saw him many and many and many a time reading his big Bible.
Yeah. We're going to have to break right there. Dr. Catherine Millard with us today. Thomas Jefferson, Accuracy versus Revisionism, an Exposé. Back in 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, geologist and president of the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, is there any evidence that man and dinosaurs lived together?
Yes, indeed there is, Chris. The Bible even describes dinosaur-like beasts in the book of Job, and Job lived after the flood. Also, we see numerous places where native peoples drew pictures of dinosaur-like beasts. Almost every nation around the world has legends of dragons, huge reptilian beasts that sound very much like our modern-day reconstructions of dinosaurs. Recently, some very interesting burial stones have been excavated from tombs in South America, which clearly show dinosaurs and humans together. These stones date from long before dinosaurs were reconstructed from their fossils. As far as we know, no dinosaurs are alive today, but we have good evidence that dinosaur-like beasts existed along with humans in the not-too-distant past. It all started back in Genesis.
For more on creation, visit our website at www.icr.org.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America, and folks, we've warned, we've shared the goals of socialism, communism, get rid of this history in America and rewrite and put down the founding fathers, discredit them, and such is the case with Thomas Jefferson. Our guest today has just written a powerful expose, Thomas Jefferson, Accuracy versus Revisionism. And talking about the life, the faith of Thomas Jefferson, and certainly the attacks that are upon him to our present day. Dr. Catherine Millard is our guest today, president of Christian Heritage Ministry. She is the author of this book. And as we're going into the break, Dr. Millard, you had indicated that there is testimony from an individual who saw him many, many times reading the Bible.
Yes, Captain Edmund Bacon was his overseer of Monticello for 20 years. He wrote a book which was published in 1862, and in it he gives the intimate life of Thomas Jefferson. He watched him like a hawk, and he gives his whole life. And in it he states, Mr. Jefferson had a sofa or lounge upon which he could sit or recline, and a small table on rollers upon which he could write or lay his books. Sometimes he would draw his table up before the sofa and sit and read or write, and other times he would recline on his sofa with his table rolled up through the sofa, astride it. He had a large Bible which nearly always sat at the head of his sofa. Many and many a time I've gone into his room and found him reading the Bible. You remember I told you about riding all night from Richmond after selling that flower, and going into his room every day, very early in the morning, and paying over to him the new United States Bank money. That was one of the times I found him with the big Bible open before him on his little table, and he busy reading it. Hmm. And I've seen him reading it in that way many and many a time. Some people, you know, say he was an atheist. Now, if he was an atheist, what did he want with all those religious books?
Yeah.
And why did he spend so much time reading his Bible? Well, that was an enigma to me for many years, as I spent more than 30 years researching the founding fathers' documents of American history, originals, and the rare book and rare manuscript division of the Library of Congress, as you know, Jim. And it was an enigma. And some years ago in the rare book collection, I was crying out to the Lord to help me find that Bible, because it's not in his collection under religion, which I've been through meticulously, and I give examples of in this book of that collection.
Mm-hmm.
It was 190 entries, mostly Bibles in different languages, entire Bibles from Genesis to Revelation, and Christian works like Wesley's writings and John Witherspoon's writings, tracts on the blessings of liberty, etc. There are only three out of 190 that were not Christian. There were reference books, Boyce's and King's Heathen Gods to Understand Ancient Poetry, Medals, and Coins. Bear in mind, at Reverend Maury's school,
yeah,
from age 9, he studied Latin and Greek.
Okay, so let's talk about the Bible you were searching for.
Okay, so I could not find that Bible. Is not in there. It's a big Bible, family Bible. So the Lord actually worked it out. He answered my prayer. I happened to need some documents. I called the University of Virginia for those documents. They said, we don't have them. They said, we have his Bible. I said, you do? Is it very big? They said, it's very big. And we have his prayer book, too. And so I said, well, I'm coming, and I made an appointment, and they took it out of the vault, and I was able to consult them, both his family Bible that Edmund Bacon's talking about and his prayer book. Both of those were not sold when he sold his collection to the Library of Congress in 1815 to make up for what he said, the barbarous essentials of the British when they destroyed the Library of Congress by fire in the 1814 war. But those two were not sold because they were his constant companions.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to photograph them and put them digitally, photograph them, put them in here. So that is the Bible he's referring to. And there's so much more evidence,
yeah,
on Thomas Jefferson reading the scriptures and incorporating them in his writings.
Dr. Millard, on page 47 in your book, you've got another important fact that many may not know. And you write that Thomas Jefferson, along with Patrick Henry, drafted a proclamation to set apart a day of fasting, humiliation, and prayers. Now, that's not something an atheist would do.
No, definitely not. And it was, it's magnificent, actually. And it was for the 1st of June, 1774. I've turned to it right here. It's on page 48. It begins on page 47. Tuesday, the 24th of May, 1774, and it's for the 1st of June. And it's it talks about, he states, this house being deeply impressed with apprehension of the great dangers to be derived to British America from the hostile invasion of the city of Boston in our sister colony of Massachusetts Bay, whose commerce and harbor on the first day of June next to be stopped by an armed force, deem it highly necessary that the said first day of June be set apart by the members of this house as a day of fasting, humiliation, and prayer, devoutly to implore divine interposition for averting the heavy calamity which threatens destruction to our civil rights and the evils of civil war, to give us one heart and one mind firmly to oppose, by all just and proper means, every injury to American rights, and that the minds of His Majesty, that's the King of England, and His Parliament, may be inspired from above with wisdom, moderation, and justice to remove from the loyal people of America all cause of danger from continued pursuit of measures pregnant with their ruin. And so then he talks about, ordered, therefore, that the members of this house to attend in their places at the hour of 10 and forenoon on the first day of June next, in order to proceed with a speaker in the mace of the church in the city. That's Bruton Parish Church in Williamsburg, the Founding Fathers Church. And by the way, all their pews are still marked, including Thomas Jefferson's and George Washington's, for the purpose aforesaid. And then that Mr. Price would be appointed to say prayer, and Reverend Mr. Gratman to preach a sermon suitable to the occasion. Well, you know, it's amazing. George Washington was there as well. And George Washington wrote in his diary for that day, went to church and fasted all day.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you said, Jim, an atheist or an agnostic or a non-believer does not pen a magnificent national day of prayer, fasting, humiliation to beseech Almighty God to change the circumstances. In fact, Thomas Jefferson also wrote a national day, proclaimed a day of thanksgiving.
And we're not going to be able to read that right now. Our clock is going very quickly. But, friends, let me just say this. We'll be telling you how you can obtain a copy of this book, close to 320 pages. And you'll see, be able to read those. These are from original documents, these writings and proclamations and positions. And really, it is something that just totally debunks the revisionism attempts that are on today. Dr. Millard, we must address the matter that so many attribute to Thomas Jefferson, and that's the matter of separation of church and state. I mean, these allegations about Jefferson have lived for year after year after year after year, and the decades have passed, and it's proclaimed like groups like the ACLU. Could you address this issue? Is this something Jefferson advocated to keep the church out of state affairs?
No, absolutely not. They took it backwards about 30 years ago, the ACLU, and coined that phrase. But as we were reading earlier on in the program, I was reading Statute for Religious Freedom in Virginia, which is also excerpted on the inner wall of the Jefferson Memorial. That's a forerunner to the First Amendment clause, establishment clause in the U.S. Constitution, the Freedom of Religion clause. And you can see, if you read that entire document, it's separation of church from state control. I quoted it from the book, but I'll try from memory again. Well aware that Almighty God hath created the mind free, that all attempts to influence the mind by temporal punishments or burdens are departure from the plan of the holy author of our religion. And then he goes on to say that people should be free to choose a pastor of their choice, whose morals they would like to pattern their lives after, and whose righteousness they would like to imitate. And to compel a man to furnish contributions of money for opinions he disbelieves as sinful and tyrannical. So if you read the whole document, it's separation of church, the Anglican state-controlled church, which that document disestablished in perpetuity forever for the very first time from separation of church, from government control, because the Anglican Church was controlled by the monarchy, which was government that controlled Virginia at the time, and the colonies. They were British American colonies. So therefore, if you read that document, which is a forerunner to the First Amendment clause, you can see clearly a separation of church from government control. In other words, government, you are no longer in this brand new United States of America, will you ever be able to take one church, like the Anglican state-controlled church, and make it a state church that everybody has to go to, all the other denominations have to go to and pay the taxes or tithes to, and that have to bow the knee to, you're disestablished now. And that's separation of church from state control.
And it's amazing because it's totally flipped from what Thomas Jefferson really believed and what he taught. And this really stemmed out of a letter that he wrote to the Danbury Baptist Association.
Yes, that letter, of course, mm-hmm. he wrote that from the White House to respond to their applause at his statute for religious freedom. Because that statute for religious freedom, Virginia set them free. They had appealed to Thomas Jefferson like the other dissident churches, Methodists, Quakers, Presbyterians, Baptists, Methodists, etc., and Quakers. And that, if you read that, I've got it in this book, mm-hmm. it's in its entirety. He begins with, believing with you, that is fundamental Bible-believing Baptists, that religion is only between our God and ourselves, our conscience, and that the civil magistrate has no business interfering. And then he goes on with that argument, ending it with, I repeat with reverence with my fellow citizens, the First Amendment clause, he repeats it, the government shall no longer, the legislature shall never again be able to enforce religion and be able to force all the other denominations to go to their mm-hmm. particular church. You know the First Amendment by heart, I'm sure. And so it's banning forevermore in the United States a national church. In fact, Thomas Jefferson wrote to Benjamin Rush about that in 1800, September of 1800, and stated that because he was becoming the new going to be president the following year, the president, that a number of religious societies had approached him because they wanted to be the national church, especially the Episcopalians and the Congregationalists, he said. But he states in this letter, I will never do it. I will never do it. And then he quotes the First Amendment clause, and then he says, this is tyranny over the mind. I have sworn upon the altar of God, eternal hostility over every form of tyranny over the mind of man. And that, in fact, is inscribed within the Jefferson Memorial in a dome.
Wow. Dr. Catherine Millard with us. Folks, we're going to be giving you a website following the break where you can obtain a copy of the book written by our guest here today, Thomas Jefferson, Accuracy versus Revisionism, an Exposé. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY American Network.
This past July marked the 200th anniversary of the birth of Robert Sheffy, an itinerant circuit-riding preacher committed to proclaiming the gospel to the mountain folk in the eastern U.S. To mark this milestone, Unusual Films released a special restored high-definition edition of this powerful film, Sheffy. Through December, VCY is renewing a special offer, making available a combination pack to reach a whole new generation. This pack includes both Blu-ray and DVD and a digital download. Also included, the public showing rights for the church and schools in order to show it publicly. While the normal retail is $19.95, during December, VCY is offering one combo pack for a donation of $15 and each additional combo pack for a donation of just $10 more. You can even obtain 10 combo sets for a donation of just $75. Call 1-800-729-9829. This offer ends December 31st.
Friends, this is so important because what we see taking place in society today is complete revisionism. I mean, we send young people to schools, to colleges, and they come out believing the revisionism without taking into account the accuracy, the truth of who men like founders were, like Thomas Jefferson, and certainly the role that he had in the Declaration of Independence. Chapter 3 of Catherine Millard's book, Dr. Millard writes about Jefferson's act for establishing religious freedom. Yet there are those who say that he was an atheist, that he had no regard for God whatsoever. There is also, you'll find in this book, and we won't be able to delve into it here today in the broadcast, but his writings show he opposed evolution. He took a strong position against sodomy, and that's all documented in this book here as well. Dr. Catherine Millard is the author. She's poured a lot of time into this book. How is it listeners from across the nation can obtain a copy of this book, Thomas Jefferson, Accuracy versus Revisionism, an Exposé?
You just go to our website, www.christianheritagetours.org/.com, and then you go to books on the homepage, click on books, and then that will take you to all the books. And it's the very last one. I've authored 20, and this is the 20th book. But it's very long. You just scroll down, and you'll find it, and then follow the prompt.
And, friends, this thing is fully documented. You'll see original source documents that are quoted in this book. And, you know, it's a powerful tool. Those that are involved in educating your children, or you want them to have a counter to what they're being taught in secular institutions, this book will have it. The Truth of Thomas Jefferson, Accuracy versus Revisionism, an Exposé. Again, go to ChristianHeritageTours.org. Click on books and just scroll on down through the list of books. You'll find it there amongst other titles that may be of interest to you as well. ChristianHeritageTours.org, and then click on books and you'll be able to find that. Dr. Millard, I'd like to run by another issue with you, and it's surfaced in recent years in politics, and it has to do with Thomas Jefferson's Quran. And there are those who teach that he was a follower of Islam, that he was friendly toward Islam in that regard. But there's been a lot of revisionism taking place on this one, too. So why did Thomas Jefferson even have a Quran?
As I mentioned earlier, I've been to his collection. He sold his collection to Congress in 1815, sacrificially, to make up for, in his own words, the barbarous licentiousness of the British and setting fire to the whole collection, which was then in the capital in 1814 when the British came and burned everything, capital city. And there are 190 entries under religion, all meticulously catalogued with his handwritten. And 187 of them are Christian. They're mostly Bibles in Latin and French, Greek, and four Bibles from the first word in Genesis, the last word in Revelation, and many Christian works, including, I mentioned earlier, John Witherspoon's writings, and Wesley's great writings, mm-hmm. Tracts on the Blessing of Liberty, and many other great concordances. There are only three that are not, and they're Boyses and King's Heathen Gods, to understand poetry, medals, and chords, and then there's mm-hmm. one little Saul's Quran. Why did he get it? It was a reference book. Because during Thomas Jefferson's administration, we had in America what we called the Treaty of Peace and Friendship between Tripoli, North Africa, and the United States of America. Those North African countries are Arab. And so in order to understand their mentality, which is based on the Quran, he had to have a small Quran, and it was a reference book. Out of 190 entries, 187 are Christian, mostly Bibles, mm-hmm. and there are three reference books. Unfortunately, that little Quran was taken out, was given to him by the probably the Librarian of Congress, when a congressman from Minnesota was inaugurated into office some years back, and it was loaned to him, and he was inaugurated with his hand upon Thomas Jefferson's reference book, the Quran. And so the secular media, of course, the leftist media, made a big story about it.
That was Keith.
Read the Quran every morning.
That was Keith Ellison.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so it was totally revisionist because they didn't know that it's a reference book, one of three reference books out of 190 entries. And I've been through every one of them meticulously. Mm-hmm. I've got a lot of them in this new book. And most of them, 187, are Christian. And mm-hmm. mostly Bible.
Right. So this was a reference book that he actually utilized to understand what Islam was advocating, and he certainly took a position in opposition to that.
Yes, because they were burning ships, you see. They were pirating American ships.
Yeah.
And so to understand a people, you've got to understand their philosophy of life. And the philosophy of life of Arabs come from, Arab people come from the Quran.
Dr. Millard, you have a chapter on the CFR, the Council on Foreign Relations, and Karl Marx. What does this have to do with Thomas Jefferson?
Well, the Council on Foreign Relations was founded by a man by the name of Mandel Howes at the time of Woodrow Wilson, and he was Woodrow Wilson's alter ego. And it was founded, he was Marxist, and he was founded to take over the world with communism. And through, and you know, have America just be an administrative part of it. And so it's going on today, and they have apparently about 500,000. In fact, I don't have the exact number in my mind of members, mm-hmm. but there are many, many members, and they're prominent members. And what does it have to do with Thomas Jefferson? Well, it has a lot to do with Monticello, because the chairman of the board of Monticello is John Meacham, who is also an author, and he is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. And its actual chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations is David M. Rubenstein, who's one of the major donors. In fact, it's quoted and published that he has given Monticello $20 million, and there was a dissenter that bears his name. And they are, at Monticello, they are promoting extremely false history on Thomas Jefferson. And, in fact, its character says assassination. And I've been able to prove that from they're basing it upon an 1873 in quotes, interview by Madison Hemmings, and I've taken that interview and I have dissected it. And there are more than 15 glaring historic inaccuracies in it. And they're basing everything, all the calumny and the lies about Thomas Jefferson on this false, forged, discredited interview.
Dr. Catherine Millard is our guest. The book is available at ChristianHeritageTours.org. Click on books. You'll find it there. If you have a question about Thomas Jefferson, a brief comment, perhaps something that's been part of revisionism, or you want to find out, is that truth or fiction? Our telephone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. Now, friends, one of the reasons we're doing this program today is because there is a mass revisionism that is going on throughout our education system, throughout specials that you'll see on television, to destroy our nation's history. That's why I started out reading those communist goals at the beginning of the program, to get control of the schools, discredit the American founding fathers, belittle our American history, the teachings of history as well. It's important that this information is known. One other matter here, Dr. Millard, Jefferson is known for the Louisiana Purchase and Lewis and Clark Expedition, and this is significant for the advancement of missionaries, wasn't it?
Absolutely, because the first 13 colonies of British America were all started for one, or there are two reasons they were started. One, to flee Protestant persecution overseas, and another, to bring the gospel to unknown coastlands, or bring the gospel to these distant shores. And all the other states, I've been able to prove, were all started by missionaries that paved the way to their joining the Union. And they're great missionaries. And the Louisiana Purchase was brilliant on the part of Thomas Jefferson. He acquired double the size of the United States. He doubled it for a mere $15 million from Napoleon. And then he sent ahead very wisely the Lewis and Clark expedition to pave the way for these missionaries and these pioneers, which would never have been possible without the foresight of Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah.
Everything he did was for his countrymen.
Mm-hmm.
You see, this is a very great founding father, and that's why he's been so maligned.
And, folks, you can learn more about it with his book. Again, it takes you to original source documents, so you're going to get an accurate view of Thomas Jefferson versus the revisionism taking place today. Let's go to Ron, who's calling from Washington State. Hi, Ron, you're on the air.
Yes, with the cancel culture going on now, on monuments and such, it troubles me that they may coming after the basis documents, the archives next, and desecrating them, and that you wouldn't even have any basis documents to go research. So that would be one way to destroy our corporate memory.
Yeah, okay.
That's one thing that troubles me a great deal.
Thank you, Ron.
Yes, well, you know, the Lord gave me this task when I came on a seminary. That was 35 years ago, and I'm probably the most unlikely person. But he gave me the task to go back to the Library of Congress to the rare book collection, rare manuscript versions, where I'd worked on my thesis for a year, and to research the original documents of American history. So you see these books. This book is 30 years of accumulated research on Thomas Jefferson, on originals, and I've done this for 35 years. All my books are originals because the Lord said preserve them.
Mm-hmm.
Many people didn't understand. They said the monuments will always be there. Everything will always be there. But now they're inaccessible, you see.
Yeah.
And so they're all there. We've captured them in the books and the DVDs.
And look what we've seen take place over the recent years, too, with even monuments coming down now as well. Let's go to Jeremy next in Minnesota. Jeremy, you're on the air.
Yes. Are you familiar? I've seen people talk about the Jefferson Bible where he took all the miracles out of the New Testament and resurrection. Is there any truth to that?
Thank you for the question.
Well, there are two chapters on it in the book, and I've gone back to trace the very beginning, which is actually, and I've got his handwritten one in here, in this book. It's not a Bible. It is, if you bear with me, I'll find
it. It's called The Wee Little Book, isn't it?
Yeah, it's called A Wee Little Book. He called it A Wee Little Book.
Mm-hmm.
But it was done in 1804, and it was... yeah, I've got the title page here.
We're 30 seconds
in his handwriting, the philosophy of Jesus of Nazareth, extracted from the account of his life and doctrines, as given by Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, being an abridgment of the New Testament for the use of the Indians, unembarrassed with matters of fact or faith beyond the level of their comprehensions. And if you read this, and I've got it's all handwritten by Jefferson, and, you know, it's quite amazing what he chose. It's a prelude to the understanding of the gospel, the Bible. And he has in here the future life, the resurrection, the last judgment, the kingdom of heaven, etc.
Some assert that he wrote his own Bible, but as she documents in her book, that really is not the case at all. Thank you for the question. Up against a break. We'll be back in a minute here on Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website, worldviewreport.com. This past Friday night, I had the distinct high privilege and honor of interviewing an exclusive interview with Lieutenant General Michael Flynn since he was pardoned by President Trump. In his first interview with WVW Broadcast Network, we got to hear from him for 30 minutes. This was set up with my friend, Lieutenant General McInerney and Mary Fanning. They were also on the line. You can hear the entire interview that was given to us first at WVWTV.com. That's WVWTV.com, as in Worldview Weekend. WVWTV.com. Tweet it, Facebook it, email it, call your friends. Listen to the warning by this Lieutenant General Michael Flynn and Lieutenant General McInerney on how America is under a cyber attack and treason, and that this election has been stolen by Russia, China, and Iran, enemies foreign and domestic. For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House.
Dr. Catherine Millard, our guest here today on Crosstalk. She is president of Christian Heritage Ministries. She has authored Thomas Jefferson, Accuracy versus Revisionism, an expose. And, friends, we could actually go on for multiple hours as this is filled with original document sources and quotes that are being taken. If you missed where you can obtain the book, be listening. We'll be giving that website address here in a short time as well. Let's get right back to the phone lines. And we have Toledo calling in from Brownsville, Texas, here on the air.
Hi. I just want to say I appreciate the interview. And my question I was going to ask was You answered the question about Great. The Bible and the miracles. And thank you.
Great. Thank you, Toledo, for the call here. And she does have extensive information in her book on this very aspect. Susan in Wisconsin Rapids, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. Dr. Millard, I received this summer a book by Barbara Chase Rabaud called The President's Daughter. And, you know, as I read it, I was just wondering if it was the historical truth or if it was a revision of Thomas Jefferson. Are you familiar with that book?
I'm familiar with her name. She wrote, she's been exposed as a fantasy, and she brings in a lot of, Madison Hemings' forged, disproved, totally disproven interview that I have here. I take it. Step by step, I dissected his interview.
So you would be very skeptical of this book then?
Absolutely. I've taken it step by step. And there are 15, more than 15 glaring historical errors in it. So it has totally disproven. But they base, she and others have, and Monticello as well, base their conclusions on that primarily. That's all evidence they have, and it's not evidence.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. Dave in Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Hello. I have. I recall reading a pamphlet or a tiny booklet by Dr. D. James Kennedy several years ago. I looked for it in my home, and I can't find it any longer. But what I recall there, the information there was that Thomas Jefferson would attend church services in the Capitol, and he asked the Marine Band to play for the services, and he also sponsored missionaries for the American Indians on an occasion, I think through a law or some other means, just to present that as part of his behavior.
Yes, absolutely. You're quite right. That comes into the book as well, my book. It's documented from Documents of American History from the Rare Book Collection that when Thomas Jefferson became first president for the first time in history, in America's history, he founded what they call the Sabbath Day Meeting in the Hall of Representatives. It was secular then. It's now called Statuary Hall. It's the old Hall of Representatives before the new House Wing was built in 1857. And so it tells you that he went every single Sabbath day or Sunday with his private secretary, and out of respect for him, they left that seat always for him and his private secretary. And the Marine Band from the Navy Yard would come, and they were dressed in red, and they would accompany them in the singing of psalms. So throughout his two presidencies, that Sabbath day meeting was held there, and preachers that came as chaplains to the House of Representatives and the Senate, they were invited to preach. So it's very, very exciting. Thomas Jefferson was very involved in the church, and the very first church he attended before becoming president, he came in John Adams at the end of November of 1800, was a tiny little barn that they had bought, the Episcopalians had bought, the corner of D and New Jersey Avenue, and they turned it into rudiments of an Episcopal church. And they tell you that he had no other motive except to worship the Lord for going, because they saw him every single Sunday.
Wow.
Going with his prayer book in his hand. And, of course, I traced his prayer book, and it's in this book.
Thank you, Dave, for the call here today. Let's go to David, Mobile, Alabama. You're on the air.
Yes. I heard that Thomas Jefferson had a Bible that he had cut out the miracles out of the New Testament. Something about not wanting the end.
I tell you what, David, we've already addressed that issue, so for sake of repeating everything we said, we're just going to have you go back, re-listen to the program here, so we can squeeze one more call, and we're down to just a couple minutes left, but that's already been addressed. Jeff, in Kingsville, Ohio, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. Doctor, I appreciate your show today, and I'm a fan of Thomas Jefferson myself, but is there... a question on his statement on liberty. Is there any other major religion in the world that specifically states that that liberty is the gift of God?
Well, personally, I don't believe so, because liberty comes from the scripture. Where the spirit of the Lord is, there is true liberty.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Christian. Liberty, you cannot get liberty, true liberty, except from the Bible and the teachings of the Bible. And Thomas Jefferson reiterated that. If you go in my book, I have the notes he made, notes on religion, in all the discussions about the Anglican Church and disbanding the Anglican Church, and it went on for years, in the House of Bridges. And he has the fundamentals of true Christianity, and then he has the Christian heretics. He knows them all. He knows the difference. And he has John Locke's approach to John Locke's belief in Christianity and expounded. And a lot of the words used in his Statute for Religious Freedom in Virginia come from those notes. And, you know, it comes from the Bible, because all the way through, he quotes scripture all the way through.
Thank you, Jeff. I wish we had time for a follow-up, but we are out of time. Dr. Catherine Millard, our guest here today on Crosstalk. Again, the book is entitled Thomas Jefferson, Accuracy versus Revisionism, an Exposé. They do have it available. It's on their website. If you want to know from source documents information on Thomas Jefferson, you will see this in this book, ChristianHeritageTours.org, ChristianHeritageTours.org. Click on books. And Dr. Millard, can people also contact the ministry by phone if they don't have access to the Internet?
Yes, 703-455-0333.
Great.
703-455-0333.
Dr. Millard, I know you have put many, many, many years of research into this and searching original source documents to put this together. Thank you for your efforts and battling against the revisionism taking place today. Thank you so much.
Delighted to be with you.
And Dr. Catherine Millard, our guest today. Again, you can check out ChristianHeritageTours.org. You may also call them 703-455-0333. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.